Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 205. Tonight's show is brought to you by oversized index cards.
And a funnel.
And a
wooden
funnel.
Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny, did you get a chance? You didn't know. You started talking immediately after I sent that link.
It's an old Saturday Night Live skit. My balls are sweaty.
No, it's sweaty balls. They're talking to Alec Baldwin, or the character he's playing, about his recipe for sweaty balls. And right now, where we are in Colorado is a recipe for sweaty balls.
The average temperature was 12 or 13 degrees. Yesterday's high was 12 or 13 degrees over average, and today was the same temperature. I just haven't bothered to dig into my weather app to look at that comparison.
Are you guys getting that little rain situation that's happening today or tomorrow?
Saturday, we finally get, like, tomorrow. Look, I don't want to, like, this is like one of those knock on wood things, but everything around me is fucking fake particle board with a wooden cover on it. I think tomorrow is like our last really stupidly hot day. It's still going to be warm. It's not getting cold, but I think we're going to be down to like late August actual like average temperatures starting on like Saturday, Sunday.
We need to get you like a little mini split in there or something.
Yeah, it's been over 90 every day, and it sucks.
Mini splits are pretty cool, and you can also, the modern mini splits, you can run them in reverse, and they're heaters.
Yeah, I've kind of looked into them, and there's just not any real estate in this house to add a contraption.
Well, so here's what we need to do. I will come out there. You guys go take a break and do something for a day, and go ride moto, go shoot some guns, whatever you want to do. Just leave the house for a day and come back, and I will have a mini split installed, and it will work.
All right. Like, you'll buy it and everything? Like, you'll just show up here with one? And
no, I'm not buying shit.
Mini split in the Ridgey.
But I will, with your money, I will source one, and I will come out there and we'll install a mini split. It'll be great. But in all seriousness, I think it'd be a good plan, because it doesn't have to be your primary source of heat in the winter, for example, but they're pretty efficient, and like more efficient than an element heater, like an electric element heater, by a huge amount. And you can supplement it with fireplace or, whatever else you want, and propane and all that jazz. But having that as like your main staple, I think would be a pretty good thing. Just my opinion.
Mm, maybe one day.
Oh, they're not like stupidly expensive.
No, you can get, again, for that size house. And depending on how you want
to
get it
set up.
It's
like a two-zone one at Home Depot is like $1,200 to $2,600, depending on how fancy
you
get. I
mean, I would just say in that kind of $2,000 ballpark, you can buy something really nice, and boom, yeah. It's like no big deal.
Yeah, I mean, this house was built before, climate change made it 20 degrees warmer here. So it doesn't have any sort of air conditioning. We have a swamp cooler upstairs so that you can kind of sleep at night without it being 100 degrees in the bedroom. But yeah, it's pretty fucking hot to be in this house without air conditioning in the summertime. But let's move on past the heat and keep going.
Okay.
To something else.
So I'll talk about what I've been doing. And what I've been doing is not a lot of bike riding. Did I talk about riding? Yeah, I rode in BV and barely made it home in time to record, and I haven't ridden since. But I did get all of the wheels cleaned up and swapped onto my Jeep. I got new wheels, and they're way nicer. They're offset, backspacing, all that bullshit that makes my mind melt because my brain's already full of through-axle standards and old 9 and 10 speed cross compatibility between road and mountain, so I'll never understand it. But that stuff is on. I dropped about 8.5 pounds per wheel of rotational weight.
Did you go from steel Johnnies to some aluminum Johnnies?
No, I went from some old American racing.
Oh, you went from iron Johnnies to steel Johnnies?
No, I went from some old alloy American Racings with 33, 12.5, 15s on them to some takeoff wheels from a newer TJ than mine. Mine's first year, and they ran it 97 through 06. They're TJ wheels. They're just different year, and there's 16 alloys with just a much more... they're a narrower tire, and they're only like an inch shorter, though. They're like 32 equivalent, so it's... I mean, the tread's way less aggressive, but I got five matching wheels. Four tires match. The spare doesn't match the tire itself, but the rim matches. It's an alloy spare, and I paid $300 for them, and they don't have any dry rot. So, yeah, I think I did okay.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Have you watched... there's an Asian fella on YouTube who does some super good off-roading stuff and talks about, you know, suspension angles and all that kind of stuff, and like actually just does stuff and explains why things are the way they are, and, you know, explains all the stuff from kind of a basic level. And he kind of dispels a lot of myths that the off-road community has about things. And it's pretty cool. It's worth a watch. You should go find him. He mostly does Toyota stuff, but I think it's applicable to what you're doing.
Is he the dude that does all the like air down and like paint stuff on tires?
He does a lot of that stuff, yeah. And he's the guy that did that pretty popular video about the width of tires for the most part. Like, hey, if everything's the same, same load rating, same stuff, if you just... is it better off-road to air down a skinny tire or a giant fat tire? And he basically found out that the skinny tire was better. And I think it just enraged everybody, because people, whether they want to admit it or not, are all into looks, and everybody wants a freaking 12 inch wide 35 or whatever the fuck. And it turns out that for actual off-roading, a skinny tire aired down gets way better traction. And also, by the way, as you found out, it's also lighter, so it's going to perform better in every single way. And people just lost their minds. It's so funny. And
why was there any speculation, or do you know why that is? Because it seems like it should be a wider tire aired down gets more traction, but I don't know. I mean, he obviously did it, and I just speculate.
I mean, I'm just going to interrupt. If you go back and watch any of the old Camel Trophy stuff, they were on pizza cutters, and they drove like across continents and shit.
Yeah,
so,
but that's all there was.
It turns out that pizza cutters are the answer at the end of the day. So,
well, and another thing that I was finding is, I wanted to run something in that 32-inch range, and forgive me because I don't know the correct nomenclature for this stuff. As I've already said, my mind is full of other shit. The 15-inch rim is pretty well supported in 31 and 33, and I just wanted to go down a little bit from 33. I mean, the truck really needs gears, but the lighter, smaller tire definitely helped that for sure. But
are you scared about the choice of tires in 16s? It seems like... and 17s
no,
probably have a way better choice of tire.
They don't. Because in 15s, you can buy 31s, very rare 32s or 33s. And in 16s, you're still in aspect ratio sizes to get the size tire I want.
Sure. I just thought that in general, for a minute there, 16s came out a lot of stuff in the early 2000s, let's call it. But they seem to have really just gone away from that 16-inch standard. And they make really, really big shit in 15s. And 17s, and of course bigger, but it seems like they just kind of abandoned the 16, but maybe I'm wrong.
Nope. But you're wrong because you're thinking about big tires. The reality is the size tire that I want to run is, and don't quote me, those of you out there that know better, but Tacomas run 16s, and this tire is an upsized tire for an old TJ, but is pretty much like I could get an all-terrain in what would be like a stock equivalent Tacoma size, and it's going to work out to be about the same as what I have now, and they're going to be, you know, 220 a wheel, where in 15s, looking up 32s, they were going to be like hugely expensive because they're not super popular.
Okay, I guess I'm more thinking if you want to get in like that 35 plus territory, it gets more challenging in 16s.
No plans.
Okay, hey, that's fine. And I know they made a lot of 16s in all the Chevy stuff for in the early 2000s as well.
I never told our listeners that I got new tires for my 4Runner.
No, you didn't.
Which ones did you get?
But I'm still talking.
I got the Falcon Wild...
Fuck y'all, I'm still going.
Wild Peak.
There you go, that's a good one.
We're talking about tires. I'm just going to jump in and say I got new tires. I had the...
PF Goodrich.
Yeah, KO2s.
Yeah, those are
Falcon
average.
Wild Peak. Yeah, the Falcon Wild Peak has been, so far, has been better in 99% of situations.
Did you get the 3 or the 4?
And I mean, like, fuck, I don't know. I don't care that much. I just wanted to try something different. Like, they are quieter. They get like 2/10 of a mile per gallon more gas mileage, better gas mileage. The only place that I notice that they are not as good, but they're still not bad, for whatever reason, the braking traction is not as good as the KO2s.
Interesting.
It's weird. Yeah, like if I'm going down something that's a little bit steep, or if I come over the top of a hill and I'm on some kind of like blown out forest road and I brake a little bit harder than I should, like I get more like ABS buzz with these, but that's it. And it's not like bad. It's not like uncontrollable and scary and terrible. I just notice that that happens more often with these than it did with the KO2s.
By the way, why the fuck do I know anything about a Falcon Wild Peak? I don't even have any on my car.
I don't know.
Because every influencer in the world was pushing that tire when it came out. I don't know if it came out, but a few years ago, everybody was like, I've got new Falcon Wild Peaks.
Sure, sure.
Wink, ding.
Man, I'll bet
and
you.
I'm not going to say they're not.
I'll bet you if I downloaded all the shit in my brain, I could at least fill up a floppy drive.
Dude, give yourself some credit. I think you could fill up
one of those 5 1/4, the really big floppy ones, or the little 3 1/2.
Well, 2 3 1/2.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, Matt. Go back to what you're talking about. You were going on about Jeep wheels and tires.
Yeah, so I got those put on. I ripped a bunch of the old Hojangle-ass wiring out of that Jeep. I paid what I paid for a reason, and I took probably, not exaggerating, 1.5 pounds of wiring out of this truck.
Was it mostly for the CB radio?
Oh, I forgot about the CB wiring. I've probably taken 3 pounds of wiring out of this truck. So it had a CB, and it had a bunch of really ridiculous switches that were poorly mounted that needed to go away. One was for some lights, and I'm going to have aftermarket auxiliary lights in the future, but they will be mounted in a much better way with much cleaner looking stuff.
Do you want me to put a mini split in your Jeep?
No.
Yes.
No.
It doesn't have air conditioning.
Oh, shit. I'll mini split that thing too.
I can add AC to it. It's not the end of the world. Or who knows? My luck with cars lately, I might just sell it in 6 months. I don't know yet. I haven't actually driven it off road to see how it performs. But I pulled out the CB, but that was like day one. It was just so bad. I pulled out the.
Did you sell your Rover?
Oh yeah, she gone. Okay. I never put that money in the bank. I turned that into Jeep.
Did you wind up with more or less dollars after the Jeep? Same amount of dollars.
It
sounds like you wound up with less dollars.
No, I initially had more dollars, and I'm going to do some math real quick.
I initially had more dollars, but then stuff happened, and then maybe I have less dollars. But
no, I'm pretty much at break even right now because I did the power steering gearbox, the pump, all the lines, the wheels, tires. I bought some half doors for it, and I bought an aftermarket exhaust that was takeoff for it as well. So, I mean, yeah. But, you know, there's a dude nearby that sells a bunch of Jeep parts, and he has one that's a little bit newer than mine with similar mileage that he wants $12,000 for. So, I'm still doing pretty good.
All right.
I'm just saying, like, I have no regrets at this point.
Yet.
You don't have to be a jerk about it. And then, yeah, just... You know, slamming at work still.
Is the crest open?
Crest is very open.
Sick.
It never closes.
Never closes. It's just, you know, bikes or skis. You choose. So, yeah, I mean, it's... But there's ski... You can, like...
I didn't know if your shop did the skis. Crest, I just haven't heard you talking about, like, waxing skis or anything.
No, it's just that, when people call, I'm like, the ski area is still open. They're like, and I'm like, and the crest is higher than the lodge. So, no, you can't ride the crest yet. So, with all that said, pretty uneventful week. Oh,
how high is the crest?
I don't know, 13.
Okay.
No, 12. It's around 12.
That's pretty tall. That's about 2,000 more than our crest.
Yeah.
And I got to shoot my new rifle with the, is it Gunworks? Yeah.
Yep.
I have a.
Suppressor.
Did you figure out which one you bought yet?
Which gun? Yeah. It's a T-shirt.
Sure, but you know, there's like other things in that. You know, like what kind of bullet does it shoot?
T3X in 270.
Okay, straight 270, not like Winchester Ultra. Short mag or anything.
No,
it's
270. Jack O'Connor and God's Caliber.
By the way, why the fuck do I know 270 WSM? I don't own one.
But again, just, that's going to be what fills up those two floppy
just packs. Like, it's concerning. It's really concerning.
Yeah, I got to shoot that, and it is wonderful. Gun shoots great. Suppressor is wonderful. The gun is just fits me really
which
well.
Which you may have already said it. Which suppressor did you get?
Gunworks. It's the steel version, not the titanium.
Okay, I have not heard of that one, so I'll have to add that to the archive.
A lot of different models. I don't remember which model.
I have the TI-6X+.
That makes the 5X+ look fucking dumb.
It does. I mean, it's just stupid. You know, it's really cool. And
oh, and Kenny, to answer your previous question, Monarch Crest, the trailhead, is at about 11,300 feet, and you very quickly climb for a while. And let's see what it is when it tops out. Oh, what the fuck am I looking at? You guys keep talking. I'll tell you where it tops out in just a minute.
Yeah,
I know it goes up to 12 at some point, but it's in that 11 to 12 range.
Yeah, that's really all I had. Gun shoots great.
Cool.
It's pretty good. It's Kenny's turn.
All right. Surprise. Yeah.
Oh, another quickie. I might sell my electric dirt bike trials bike on Saturday.
Oh, man. What are you going to turn that into?
Savings.
Okay. Doing some adulting?
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, over the next year, I need to buy a full-size pickup truck. So I just got to, you know, turn some things into money and set that money aside and then turn that money into truck and then turn my current truck into different money and keep moving forward.
It's understandable. Which, not to turn this completely into the vehicle and whatever show, but I think vehicles are fairly universal. I think people go through these same situations that we do on figuring out what to do and how to shuffle your life around and what you actually need to move around your toys as an adult. So which truck are you looking at?
It's probably going to be a Titan or a Silverado, just like a true full-size truck.
Sure.
I mean,
well, I just didn't know if it was like, I'm getting whatever, this generation F-50, and that's what I'm going to get, or whatever.
No, just more. I want, and I think I understand, or I have some theories on why they've fallen out of fashion, but like three-door trucks aren't really common anymore, and I think it's because they don't have a B-pillar, like right there at the driver, so I don't think they get as good safety ratings.
I think that's part of it, but you got to understand, most people that have full-size pickup trucks don't really use them for full-size pickup trucky things.
I know.
They use them like an SUV, which is, I thought that was really stupid, but I mean, I kind of get it. You know, you need to carry around a couple kids or whatever and just having that back seat, or even if you don't use the back seat, when you fold them up, it's like actually a huge storage area that's secure, which is pretty cool. Yeah. I don't know. At first, when I was thinking about pickup trucks, I always thought that having a, you know, 6 to 8 foot bed with a super tiny cab was the only thing you should ever do. But honestly, the more I don't really daily drive mine, but when I do use it, having that decent size cab is incredibly nice, honestly. So I get it. And all the things I do is, you know, a dirt bike fits in a 5 foot bed, 5.5 foot bed, no problem. Like it just, the tire sits on the tailgate like it would anything else. Unless you have a freaking 8 foot bed, you're not going to close the tailgate with a dirt bike in there. So, and I guess if you're going to put a camper on it or whatever, I get that. There's a different use case for that. But for the kind of average person that's going to tow something from time to time, but it's really just driving around town with their family, that's why there's giant four-door pickup trucks.
And that's what I was going to say, is I'm going to do exactly what you just kind of poo-pooed, which is if I buy a full-size truck, it's going to have at least 6.5, if not 8.
Are you doing that specifically because you want to put a camper on it?
Well, it's a couple of things. I understand you say you can just leave the tailgate down, but then you can't just pile shit into the back of the truck without having to strap everything in meticulously, or it'll just fall out the back.
I guess, but like, what all are you putting back there? I'm not saying that you're wrong, because I've changed my mind over time. I think you can get away with quite a short bed unless you really are getting like one of those really nice, you know, truck campers that requires, let's say, at least a 6 foot bed, for example, or something like that. I get that.
I mean, I just look at it as I could put two dirt bikes in the back, one on a trailer hitch, close the tailgate, throw some stuff in there with a couple of boxes, and have a passenger with some luggage next to them and drive to Moab if I wanted.
Yeah, I mean, that's reasonable. Like, man, three dirt bikes. Three dirt bikes is a lot of dirt bikes.
And why do you need three dirt bikes?
No, that's, well, if I wanted to, or if I want to go and get plywood, which, for those of you that haven't realized, it's an hour each direction for me to get reasonably priced plywood, I just want a big bed. And if I ever throw a regular topper on there, my big ass isn't sleeping in the back of a truck that doesn't have at least 6.5 feet.
Yeah, I think if you are going to, I think that for me, the compelling reason to get at least a 6 foot bed for someone like you, if you're going to sleep in it or you're going to put a camper in it, I get it. But if you're not going to do those things, I would definitely vote you just get the four door because it's a tough thing. You should try any full size truck that has four doors. It's actually pretty fucking legit. I thought it was stupid. I really did. But once you put those seats up and you realize the amount of shit you can put in that cavity back there, it's bananas. And it's like a giant pass-through. You can open both doors, like just throw shit in there. It's kind of cool. Just saying.
No, I would have four doors and all that bed. If I'm going to have, like, the gas mileage won't be much different. Like, if I'm going to have a truck that's a pain in the ass to park and is not going to get great gas mileage, I want to be able to fucking fill up the back seat and fill up the bed and clamp it style, just go down the road with everything.
No, that's cool. Do you know if you got like a full size Titan, for example, do they make that in a 6 or is it a 6.5? What's the longest bed you can get in that thing?
They make Titans with an 8 foot.
Oh,
pretty
shit.
Sure. I've seen
okay.
So
by the way, we've been talking for like a half episode about fucking
no,
trucks.
No, that's fine.
Shit,
cars so and trucks I think are relevant just for most people. And hey, if you're cranky about that, then that's fine. You can be cranky and you can
I'm cranky about
and you
it.
Can write to us and be right, like, Penny, I fucking hate you and I hate cars and I walk everywhere. like we live in the fucking western part of the United States of America. We're gonna have like trucks and guns. It's required when you move to those states. They make you sign a thing. All right. Surprise, surprise, I rode my dirt bike some more. I explored a little bit more down south in the LaSalle Mountains. You all right?
Hold on, Kenny. Kenny, can I tell you what's happening here right now in the house?
Yeah.
I look, Matt often says my back hurts or whatever, and he'll like stand up and stretch his hamstrings by just putting his head on the table. Well, he's doing that, but he's got his fucking pants off.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
He's like Winnie the Pooh right now, stretching his back with his head on the table.
Yeah, this is what happens when you live with a guy. I never said it was a good idea.
It is just so hot. Like, since the moment I worked outside today, like running around, cleaning up and doing stuff like that. And I took a quick shower, or actually right before we recorded, I vacuumed the whole house, which the vacuum makes heat and it's already hot here. And it was like, I was
I
trying
can
to
make you a nice little, when I'm out there doing your mini split, I'll get you a nice DeWalt vacuum as well.
Dude, and it will immediately catch fire with Taco's hair. Like, it will not, it's not up for the case. But I ripped through the shower really quick, and I put on some boxers and a t-shirt, and I'm trying to record, and my ass is just sweat stuck to my seat, and I just stood up to air the things out for a minute, and Andrea just had to bring it up in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was full Winnie the Pooh because I got like ball sweat sticking me to the chair right now. Like, I just.
It's how it goes. I mean, you know, guys like to not have pants on, you know, and ladies, if you want to not have pants on too, it's fine.
All right. So, Kenny, what were you saying?
All right. So, surprise, surprise. I rode my dirt bike, went down south to the LaSalle Mountains. I had all scoped out a really cool route, at least I thought it was a cool route. Using the old Garmin out. The story was, drove down this after driving for an hour and a half. By the way, this is not a boohoo story. This is just part of exploring. Almost all my exploring has gone extremely well. Very rarely do I run into weird roadblocks or go to some dead end road and it's a total bust or whatever. Very rarely does that happen. In fact, usually I find unbelievably cool ass shit. Like, I'll be in the middle of nowhere and there's just like a single track moto trail on the side of the road. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? And I like ride down and it's pretty cool. It just makes no sense to me. So anyway, I drive down this gravel road and find a decent parking spot that doesn't appear to be private property. And I'm like, cool, this is kind of exactly where I want to be. And that was my starting point. Unload the moto, get all dressed, do all that stuff, crank up the bike, roll down the road. It's a pretty decent road. I'm ripping 50 miles an hour. doing some apexes, go down like three or four turns. So this is like 2 minutes, and then boom, it's just like a gigantic ranch entrance and there's nothing else there. And I'm like, fuck. So this road that I had scoped that goes over this entire mountain range was fully private. And I couldn't find any other way around. So yeah, boohoo. I just didn't do my research well enough to realize that that it was a private road. It just didn't occur to me. So anyway, no big deal. I kind of weighed my options. It was going to be probably 30 minutes of riding on a not great highway to get where I wanted to go. So I'm like, ah, fuck it, whatever. I'll load back up. So I loaded it all back up, got in the car, drove that 30 minutes or so, unloaded in a new spot that was not really where I was planning on going. So I had to do a little bit of, I don't want to say bushwhacking, but like suburban bushwhacking, going down this road, like, does this go where I think it goes? And it's a gravel road, and I'm hoping there's not like a gate. But anyway, I find myself to some national forest area, find a nice little trailhead, unload there. I rip through all the way across the mountains like I wanted to, but just in a different way. Find my way into this little town in the valley, and then I was going to go up the big boy mountain. But as I'm doing that, there is a gigantic thunderstorm rolling through, just super ominous clouds. And it's like, even though there's mountains on both sides, it's definitely rolling down into the plains. And it's very open and exposed. I definitely got some like Kansas vibes. And there's like huge amounts of wind and super dark clouds and lightning and thunder everywhere. And I'm like, fuck. I just sat there and just looked at it for a minute and was trying to figure out what direction it was going. Couldn't really figure it out. Definitely seemed like, unfortunately, it was coming towards me. So I couldn't wait it out. So I had to double back, go back up the mountain. So I went back that way. And then I was thinking, well, shoot, maybe I can go find some other cool stuff up here and maybe the weather is going to hold off. But yeah, weather was not holding off. It was like coming up that mountain. So anyway, I had to load up. It rained its balls off. I just sat in the car for a minute and kind of waited for that storm to roll through for about an hour or so. And kind of a bust on riding. I only rode for about an hour, but I did drive the car around a little bit and found some other cool little spots. I wound up going up a road that was a little gnarlier than I should be going up, and it was also raining, so I decided to not be a dumbass and turned around. And also looking at the map, I found a road that goes to the highway from where I was up in the mountains, and it looked like, cool, this is a dead little, just dead straight gravel road. Fucking boy, was I wrong. It was dead straight, but that son of a bitch was a power line road, and it was very steep. Oh. Yeah. It was, yeah. So definitely I descended some shit that I shouldn't have descended, but it was mostly downhill. I was just worried that I was going to get to a spot that was going to be so steep and bouldery and gnarly that I was not going to be able to make it. And then I would be fucked because there was no offshoot roads. And if I had to turn back the stuff I came up, the Ridgey was not making it up that shit. Not happening. So, you know, just part of the adventure, but it all turned out, you know, I took my time and looked stuff like I would like stop and like kind of half walk down a section and look at it and be like, yeah, I can find a line. I'll straddle this, do that, whatever. And anyway, I made it down. It was fine. The motorcycle did not come out the back this time, which is good. And I think that was pretty much my week. I have a new ECU on order for the Husky. So that should be here any day now. So I'll get to play around with that. Get a couple extra horse torques on that thing, especially down low, which will be really cool. It'll be just kind of a fun experiment. Probably turn it into a new motorcycle. It should be like in the ballpark of 5 to 10 horsepower, which on a 30 horsepower motorcycle is a pretty big deal. So it's going to go from, you know, like 30 at the tire to 40 at the tire, which is pretty cool.
Damn. What do you do with so little horsepower?
It does just fine.
Okay.
All right. Is that everything?
That's it.
Right, I haven't really been doing a lot in the last week. As usual, I just need to ask Matt, what the fuck have I done in the last week? I don't even know.
How's your new wrist?
It's healing up. It's still got like a sore spot in it. That's just, you know, where they like opened it up and cut a ligament in half. But other than that, it's good. I'm at the point now where I can do most things pretty pain, like without noticing anything. The problem is like I can do most things without it hurting, but then it'll hurt afterwards, which is really annoying, but you know, I just have to pay attention to what I'm doing, which is difficult sometimes. Other than that, I went out elk scouting kind of in the area where Matt and I explored on e-bikes the other day. And it was pretty fun, but didn't really find any recent elk sign, so I probably won't hunt in that area, at least not this year. I just need to explore it a lot more if I'm serious about trying to hunt there, but you know, not this year. It's not going to happen, but that's all right. I've got plans. Let's see. We've got like one more JRA to record before I disappear into the woods for a month. Are you guys going to keep recording during September or?
No, we're just going to throw the whole thing away.
I mean,
we can talk about stuff and we'll have a guy's show. Talk about, you know,
being Winnie the Pooh and walking around the house.
Yeah, you know, we'll talk about
balls,
talk about penises and boobies and all this, you know, stuff we talk about.
Soapy titties.
Yep.
Oh boy.
We are sophisticated.
Very much. All right, so that's kind of it. I don't have anything exciting. So we should move on to new shit, which there's not a lot of exciting new shit happening. I did see that Nino Schurter is retiring.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah. But that's kind of the biggest news of the week. There's not a whole lot of really exciting and new shit.
How about this? I feel like we maybe neglected some questions because we ran pretty long on the past couple episodes.
Yeah, we had one that was like a book.
Why don't we just answer that one and then we can finish off with any other remaining news and new shit. How about that?
Yeah, that's a good idea. All right, let me pull that up. It's over here. Might have to get Matt to read this. Either that or like we'll have to switch off like mid-message because it's just a long message.
All right. Let me do a little computer adjustment here. From JK, longtime listener, first-time question submitter. Hopefully this provides you with some content for a bit. First off, thank you for the years of great content and honest takes on the bike industry. Also glad to hear Andrew's surgery seems to have gone well. Well, thanks. Bit of context. My one and only bike is a 2023 Steel Esker Hayduke GX Mechanical with a Bomber Z2, right? Is the Z2 a Bomber?
Z2 is a Manitou. Good Lord. It's a Marzocchi. It's a Fox Rhythm, essentially. Yeah. It's fine fork. Fine fork.
That I ride on trails around where I live in Maryland. Overall, I like the bike and it served me well. Shout out to Tim and Parker. My one gripe is the brakes, DB8s. You talked about them on a prior show, and while they've never failed me, they don't inspire confidence with the variety of noises they manage to create. So, first question, what brakes do you recommend? I don't care whether they have a lot of bite or amazing modulation. I'll adapt. I just want them to be consistent, powerful enough. I'm around 200 pounds and relatively quiet. So, do we want to break this down? Let's start with the brake question.
I think that's a good one to start with.
I would say 200 in the front, 180 in the rear, organic pads in your existing brakes.
Yeah, it sounds like
you got to make sure you bed them in too.
Yep, very, very important, without a doubt. I don't personally like the feel of DB8s, but there's nothing wrong with DB8s. They have the ability to make all the power that you want. I think rotor size is pretty important. I think people are realizing that in general, running quad piston brakes with ish mil rotors on most bikes is perfectly reasonable to do, which is, I think, what Matt is suggesting. You already have the four piston brake part of the equation there. Brake pad compound and what rotor you run, very important. The problem is I can't tell you what's going to work and what's not. If you ride in ultra dusty conditions, one combo might work.
Maryland.
If you ride in super humid conditions, it might be another combo. I don't actually know. And every bike has its own personality. I know it sucks and it seems like a cop-out answer, but I don't know what the answer is for you. So whatever you have right now, do something different. So if you have centerline rotors, when you get your new rotors, go buy HS2s. If you have HS2s right now, go buy centerlines. If you have metallic compound pads right now, go buy some organics. Those are my pieces of advice.
And so this is what I want you to do also while you're playing around with your brakes and taking rotors off. You're going to have a couple of rotors in your hand. Take those two rotors together.
Tape.
I meant just take them, like hold them together. And while the pads are out of your brake, I want you to squeeze your pistons out until all four pistons contact those two rotors that are sandwiched together. That is about as far out as they can go without falling out of your caliper and losing all the juice. So don't go any further than that. You just want to squeeze the lever until they come out and they bite on that rotor sandwich.
And I'm assuming that two rotors is like the absolute maximum thickness that you can have and still be in the inner, that little cutout section of your caliper where your correct. Rotor usually goes. If you go any more than two rotors, yeah. it's physically not going to fit in there, correct?
Yeah.
So make sure that whatever two rotors you use, because if you maybe have some little bit thicker ones or something weird, just make sure that those rotors are going actually inside the caliper. Don't just like have yeah. them near your caliper and then start squeezing it.
Right.
It's got to go up in that yeah. cavity.
Right. Yeah. You got to have your rotor all the way up in your caliper. Squeeze the pistons out. Take some alcohol. Spray your pistons. Take a toothbrush. It doesn't have to be, you know, like clean, but it can't be like greasy. Just take a toothbrush and scrub around in there. Maybe take a Q-tip and kind of go around each piston, make sure that they're clean. And then take something that's plastic. I like a Pedro's tire lever. You might find something different, but you want plastic. You want something that is not going to damage that piston. Don't use a screwdriver.
I have a side question. Are there people out there that use a non-Pedro's tire lever?
Yeah.
They exist.
God, that's, yeah, isn't that crazy to think about? Who the fuck would do that?
I know, that's weird.
Anyway, continue.
But yeah, so find something plastic that you can use to push those pistons back in. If they were super dirty, or if one seemed a little sticky, go ahead and do it again. Push them all out, clean it, push them back in. Because sometimes, not all the time, sometimes brake noise is caused by the pistons not working together right, and it just kind of creates a weird frequency because your pad's at a slight angle, and that can make your brakes noisy. So that's just going to eliminate one of the things that could be making your brakes make noise. So yeah, that's Matt and Kenny said, different pads and rotors, organic compounds tend to be quieter, and while you're changing that stuff around, go ahead and clean those pistons up.
But there's nothing, I think people have a misconception that like a DB8 brake is going to make different noises than like an XTR brake. And I'm going to disagree with that. Like, there very rarely is anything like lever, hose, caliper going to have anything to do with noise. For the most part, it's going to have to do with rotor and pad and or just the resonant frequency of your bike.
And I will say this, some bikes, and the Esker won't suffer from this. This is not a paid advertisement. I'm just going to suck Tim Kruger off with no financial reimbursement, but their dropout system is not susceptible to this. But I have seen some hardtails, and I'm not disagreeing with what Kenny said, but they're like, man, I'm gonna upgrade the brakes on my Thai single speed. And they go from like a two piston 160, didn't make much power and didn't have much leverage on that that dropout style. And then suddenly they go to a four piston with a 180, and now the bike has this odd harmonic resonance because the dropout itself is flexing, because the dropout points off the back of the chainstay seat stay junction, and there's only like 30 millimeters of space between the two bolts, and all that power is going through that, and it flexes the bike and makes the bike make terrible noises. So
yeah, and also I kind of want to just ask you, this listener, sometimes brakes just make noise. For example, like if you're doing a 4,000 foot descent and you have been holding only your rear brake for 25 minutes and it's also thunderstorming out and you're splashing through puddles, guess what? At some point, your brake's probably going to make a noise. So I just want to make sure that we understand that sometimes, no matter what, on a perfect bike with a perfect setup, sometimes brakes are going to make noise. So I just want to make sure that you don't have an unreasonable expectation on the noises that your bike should make, because I've heard both sides. I've been riding with people whose bikes are so goddamn noisy, the creakiest bottom bracket, broken frame, whatever the hell, making just horrific noises, and they just don't even think twice about it. And then I've ridden with other people who are like, did you hear that? Did you hear my bike make that noise? And I'm like, what? The sound that was a feather rubbing against another feather? Like, your bike is fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, brakes are just, as long as you are getting power out of your brakes, if they make some noise, especially if they heat up a lot, if they make some noise, like, they're just, sometimes they just make noise. Like, it just happens. So unless it's just constant,
that's a problem.
Yeah, like if you can put your bike in a work stand with the wheels off the ground and then kind of like hold the brake halfway and turn your wheel and it honks, yeah, that's a problem. But if it's you know, I don't know, 10% of your ride, you can make your brakes make some noise. I wouldn't worry too much about it. All right. We want to go to the next part of his.
Yep. Next part.
Part do. Also, going back to prior episode, I think one of the reasons why I get along so well with the Hey Duke is relatively tall stack height. I'm 6'4 and finally feel like I have a bike that gets me in a good riding position. A conversation on a prior episode was the relatively low stack heights for short travel full suspension bikes. I agree that it's an issue, but why is it an issue to begin with? Is this a vestige of bikes in this class being Marathon XC bikes or something else? I mean, you say that on my... If I were... It's all very relative. Meaning, a lot of people, you ride those bikes differently. And you have to have some weight on the front wheel to push a bike hard. And I don't I'm not saying you're not pushing your Hey Duke, but like, your Hey Duke wasn't built for, you know, World Cup racing. It was built for exactly what you're doing with it, which is riding it like an average person. And yeah, I think you need a low stack height on some bikes so you can get the bars low, so you can get weight on the front wheel, so you can push the bike.
There's also
some argument people will make that a more closed hip angle, you can produce more power, but that's arguable.
My take on that is I think that he's right. I think the industry as a whole, from my personal opinion, generally have stack heights that are too low for the average person. And I do think that's a problem. Hopefully it will change. I think a lot of it is how a frame looks. People don't think that a tall head tube looks good. They look a little goofy, I'm not going to lie. And people are so programmed for what is standard. And when people see something that's outside of the range of, like, you know, 90 to 120 or 140, it just looks weird. It almost looks out of place. So I think that's a big part of it, is manufacturers are scared of how that looks.
All right. Next question. We got a bunch here.
Also going, I take my bike to the local bike shop for annual service. When I take it in, I want the shop to tell me what the bike needs to keep me on the trails. I can't think of a time when I overruled a tech and declined a service. At my annual service this year, I was a bit disappointed they didn't clean the chain. To be fair, the chain did not need to be replaced, and I did not ask them to do this, but I sort of thought it might happen in the tune-up process. Am I a dick to have thought this maybe should have happened? Yes and no. I think it is a problem of bike shops are a bit... bike shops are a hard place. It's kind of this, like, chicken or the egg. What happens first? More pay or better people? But I know that some... I think bike... Okay, I'm going to back up. I think bikes should be washed. And if you do pay for a big service, your bike should be washed. And if we have someone come in and they're like this just happened this week, lady comes in, she's like, hey, I'm racing this weekend. I want you to go through it. I want new sealant in my tires, and I think I need my brakes bled. And sure enough, the front brake needed to be bled. And I put on the ticket courtesy wash, because when you wash that bike, you really see what the bike needs. When you wash it, you notice little things like the Dub preload adjuster ring. You know, if it's full of dirt, you can't see that the ring... You can't like even serve. Well, or like, my big thing is I'll just look at the gap in it. There shouldn't be a gap in the pinch side. If there's a gap in the pinch side, obviously it's not tight in terms of fixing in place. And if it's not fixed in place, there's probably play in the crankset. So I'm a big fan of washing bikes. Now, with that said, if you paid for a true tune-up, which I hate, I think tune-ups are the dumbest thing in the bike industry. Modern mountain bikes and modern road bikes do not need tune-ups.
And by the way, I'm going to chime in and say that I agree with that statement. I think customers have been programmed that their bike needs this tune-up. And it's a hard thing too, right? Because you need to look at everything on the bike at some point properly. You need to give everything proper time. Really look at the wheels. You need to look at all the bearings, all that stuff. It doesn't take long necessarily, but you need to have an experienced person to look at it. It might only take 5 minutes, but that person has 15 years of experience and knows exactly what to look for, and might realize that your bike fully checks off the list, everything is dialed. And that needs to be worth some amount of money, but like, assuming that you get the same exact, like, you're doing the same amount of work on every single tune-up, it's just never going to be the case. And I feel like some people are overpaying for what they're getting, and some people are very much underpaying for what they're getting. So I agree. I think the tune-up thing, I think we need to work our way past the tune-up.
And I am. I am the head service writer at our shop, and I just tell people no. I explain it like this. Tune-ups were great for 10-speed road bikes or cable everything road bikes. and they were okay for cable everything mountain bikes to a certain extent. But in the modern world where we have disc brakes with fluid inside and we've got one by drivetrains and we might have a worn chainring and yada, 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 I tell people like off the bat, I'm like, hey, I don't want to start with a blanket $150 and then just start adding parts on top of that. I want to address what your bike needs. And that's really twofold. One, the first part is true. I could easily write an $800 service ticket for you. It's no problem. It's not that hard to do on a well-ridden mountain bike. But the reality is you don't need it. And the other half of this equation is when I tune that bike up, I own it. Oh, you just tuned my bike up and now the front derailleur doesn't shift. 9 weeks later, you know, on God knows how many miles, and this front derailleur doesn't shift because it's fucking clapped out. Like, the front cable is broken or trying to break now. Oh, well, you should have, like, what do you mean I have to pay to get a cable installed? You just tuned it up. Like, that's, like, when you go to Pep Boys for a oil change, they're not like, oh, we're going to tune her up, boss. They're like, no, we're going to change your oil. And you get a line item that says, like, courtesy washer fluid fill and, you know, airbox check and yada, yada and whatever. And those things are on there at $0. And then when you come in, you're like, oh, my transmission doesn't shift. They're like, well, we didn't touch your transmission, you know. So, yeah, I'm going to go both ways here, which is, one, did you really pay for a tune-up? And does that tune-up include cleaning? If so, yes, you have a leg to stand on. The other side of that is, even if you didn't pay for a true tune-up, which I don't think mountain bikes should have, but if you did a big annual service on your bike, I think getting the bike cleaned up for the customer, and I don't know what your definition of cleaning the chain is. Does that mean you brought it in with grease boogers and it was just wiped off, or it came in kind of black and it left kind of
black? Yeah, like, do you expect, like, with a tune-up, do you expect your chain to have, like, been taken off, put through a full parts washer and look cleaner than brand new factory clean because it doesn't even have, like, the factory thick grease on it anymore? Like, I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm going to jump back to what Matt's talking about in the tune-up real quick. It's not that mountain bikes don't need TLC. Hell, they need more TLC than some previous bikes. But there's no, like, $100 amount of work that you can evenly do to two mountain bikes and actually end up with something that's better, right? Maybe outside of truing wheels. But even that, the deal is most modern wheels, outside of dents and shit, if you spin the wheels and they're, like, within a mil radial and axial, don't fucking touch them. And, like, it's just, what are you really doing at that point? There's no, what are you going to lube the chain? Like, you're not taking apart a headset and, like, lubing something. You're not taking out the bottom bracket and lubing something. People seem to think that this is how modern bikes work, and it's fucking not. They're all cartridge bearings. If it's not creaking and it doesn't feel crunchy, don't fucking touch it. Leave it alone. Same thing with the bottom bracket. If it's not creaking and it's not crunchy, it's fucking great. Move on. What's the next thing on your bike? There's just nothing that you're tuning up for $100 on a mountain bike. However, do you need a sealant refresh? Do you need your brakes flushed? Is your chain clapped out? Do you need, you know, is your dropper, like, notchy or messed up? Is there some,
have you serviced your fork?
Yeah, is there some horrific creak on your bike? And yeah, have you done wiper seals front and rear every 100 hours? Those are all very valid things, but there's not just this, like, random annual thing. Like, you put 100 miles on your bike and you, I mean, I'm glad you want to take care of your stuff and bring it in, but there's just nothing that I can give you for $100 or $150 or $200 that's some blanket thing. So I think we just need to, unfortunately.
Well, he actually doesn't say tune up in his question. He just has an annual service.
Okay. So, well, maybe
I'm assuming he's walking in and being like, my bike's here. What does it need?
Yeah, we might have misread that. And it's hard, though. And like what Matt said, it's hard to find people. It is difficult to find people that really care. Very rarely are you going to find a mechanic who's going to try to sell you something that you don't need. That's, I think, extremely rare, like unbelievably rare. Does it happen? I'm sure it does, but extremely rare. If anything, what's going to happen is you're going to get someone who might actually not sell you enough stuff, to be honest. They don't look at your bike thoroughly enough when they check it in. They're not measuring your chain. They're not looking at your chain ring. Even though there's nothing wrong with it and it's just, like, super clapped out. They're not, like, you know, wiggling your wheels or spinning them real quickly and just putting a hand on your frame and feeling if it's got I9 bearings or not. You know, they're not doing just the basic stuff or asking you the question like, hey, when was the last time you got your wiper seals done? And how much do you ride a year? and then just making a determination of, okay, boom, it's time to do wiper seals, right? I think a lot of people miss that, unfortunately, but that's what's required on a modern mountain bike. Basically, it's going to be very different. If you ride...
Yeah, and he does say at the end of the question, he says, I sort of thought it might happen in the tune-up process, but I don't know, like, maybe he went to the shop and got whatever they consider a tune-up, or maybe not.
Yeah, I just think we need to train the general public that it needs to be, and our service riders as well. This needs to be a very tailored service. Your bike might come in, it might need literally nothing. And it might come in and it needs $1,500 worth of stuff. That's just how it works.
But I will jump in and say one thing, though. Like, I am a big fan, and of course this is time allowing, but like, if you come in for a sealant refresh and I'm doing that on the spot, I'm going to wipe your chain off. Or if you just bring me in a wheel because you're struggling to mount a tubeless tire, you know, you're like, I just can't get it, dude. Like, I got them bitch computer hands, because that's what dudes tell me. Because they can't just admit that they can't install tires. If I seat your tire, I'm going to wipe it off. Well, like, wipe
I agree with that, too, that from a business standpoint and from a consumer standpoint, but from a business standpoint, you got to realize how important it is, even though it seems so vain and silly, how important it is that a customer receives back a bike that is cleaner than when it came in. It can take 30 seconds and it makes a huge difference. So that's just a shout out to all the bike shop people out there, is make sure that that bike is handed back to the customer cleaner than when it came in. Even if it didn't come in for a massive overhaul where you're like actually fully washing the bike and putting stuff in parts washers and all that, I'm talking about just a very basic thing that it came in for. Take the 30 seconds and, you know, wipe off the chain real quick, throw some lube on it, and wipe down the frame. It takes 30 seconds. And
yeah,
it's a big deal.
And I like, you know, and I know Matt says he likes to do, to wash a bike. And I think, like, if a bike is actually, like, super dirty, I absolutely like to wash a bike. But if it's just kind of, like, I don't know, a little dusty...
Well, sure.
Or something. Like, I really like to just do a stand cleaning, because that way you get to put your hands on the entire bike and you look at it a little bit closer than you would if you were just, you know, spraying it off and hitting it with like a sponge or a brush or whatever. You just get to look it over a little closer and you notice stuff.
Well, I guess my follow up to that is, like, my courtesy wash on that person's bike, my process was I grabbed the hardtail, because I'm not going to give customer names, and this is how I'm going to keep it square. I grabbed this hardtail, and I went and I gave it like a 3 to 5 minute wash. Like, I just hit the wheels. It was a lefty bike. I kind of hit the top of the lefty Ocho, and there was just like Gatorade and shit all over the down tube.
And you know, it's
tube,
an Ocho, like, fork, so it's probably got most of its oil leaked out of the fork, so you got to clean all that up.
Well, I like hit it really quick, and then I set it in the sun. And then I went inside and I did a brake pad install on this full suspension bike and wiped it off real quick, test rode it, called that customer. And then I grabbed the hardtail and I took it inside. And that's when I did give it like a wipe and a look over, you know. But I'm with Andrea that, like, you need to look at the bike. When you're just ramming a brush around, you don't see shit. But if it's covered in Gatorade and sadness, you can't see shit anyways.
Yeah, yeah. There's always that. If it's like got that slick of just Gatorade and dirt.
Yeah.
It's been sunbaked on. You kind of got to wash that.
And going back to what Kenny's talking about, like, every bike needs to be cleaner. Like, this is for the bike shop people that listen. Like, wipe off that shock stanchion. Floss out behind the crown on the, or the arch on the fork, you know, between the lowers and the stanchion. And, but you're doing this in customer view and you're like, yeah, keeping this clean, you know, the dust wiper does this, the foam ring's right here, yada, 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 the bath oil does this. And that's why yearly service is important, because over time, these seals degrade, the bath oil kind of runs out. So, you know, it's like changing the oil in your car. You don't do it because you have a problem. You do it to prevent a problem. So, you know, I it's really hard to talk about this without boasting. But the reality is, like, your service rider needs to be adding value above what the customer feels like they're paying for, but also selling the shop as really caring. Because if customers don't walk through the door, I don't have a job. That's just how capitalism works. But also, I'm planting that seed of, yeah, this has a 100 hours or 1 year interval, whichever comes first.
Your service writer needs to be your most experienced person in the shop, in my opinion.
And even though you just want sealant, we're going to talk about future things. You know, you'll need to get this done in the fall. You'll you know, this is the last set of brake pads for this rotor because I'm measuring your rotors with calipers. And I'm educating, like, hey, these, you know, the rotor measures 1/6. It wears out at 1/5. It sounds like it's not much. It's just 0.1 of a millimeter, but it's still a third of the life because it starts at 1/8. You go to 1/5. You got 3/10 of a millimeter to work with. You've used up 2/10. So after these pads, plan on getting a rotor and pads. And they're like, oh, cool. I didn't know that, you know. And yeah, you're putting on a show that's educational, and it needs to be quick, and it needs to be
thorough.
It's thorough and educational, I think, is the big thing.
So, JK, the answer to your question, I think they should have wiped your chain off.
But it depends on what your expectations are.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
All right. Next question. Does the new high-end mechanical still exist? Maybe I'm a bit of a Luddite, but is electronic shifting that much better? Or more cynically, do companies just make more money with electronic shifting than mechanical? This is more just a curiosity at this point. I am perfectly happy with GX Mechanical, but I'm going to need to replace it at some point.
Ooh, man. So, I got opinions on this one.
I have opinions too, but we're going to start at the top, or we're going to start at the bottom and work our way back up. I'll go quickly, which is, in the future, if you wanted to go to SRAM 90 transmission, that is a GX equivalent product, and that will be made for the foreseeable future. I presume, because there's a ton of non-UDH bikes out there running SRAM Eagle, electronic, and mechanical, that stuff will be made for the foreseeable future as well. I don't think Shimano or SRAM is just going to be like, nah, we're going to quit selling something that people use and makes us a lot of money that we've already done all the R&D on and put all of our money into. Like, they're going to keep printing that shit and making money. That's now 5 years from now, will there maybe just be GX? Who knows? But with that said, with your Esker, you will need to buy portage dropouts that are UDH compatible to work with transmission 90. And if you've been happy with GX, you'll be happy with 90. I think that shit rocks. Now, I'm not going to try to sell you on electronic versus not, but transmission is inarguably better than Eagle. That's it.
I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't dislike electronic stuff, that I've told everyone multiple times on the show. I like mechanical shifting better because I like the way that it feels at the shifting button at the shifter. I just like how that it feels to pull a cable. Very tactile. And I don't necessarily love the feeling of clicking a button. Even like Shimano did, they made their shifter for their new electronic stuff. They made it feel more like a cable shifter, but you still don't get the same feedback of as you push it, of hearing and feeling the shifting shift in response to how hard you push on that button. And I like mechanical shifting better. And I mean, if whatever bike I get in the future has to have, I mean, there are some bikes now that don't have holes for cable routing. I won't mind having electronic because it works great. But mechanical also still works great. And, you know, I'll use mechanical as long as I can, kind of like you. But, you know, if you replace it, like if you want to replace it, go ahead and buy the shit you want to replace it with right now. I don't think SRAM is going to stop making GX Mechanical Eagle for a very long time. I think they're going to stop making XX1 and X01 pretty quickly. But, you know, I think GX is going to be around for a pretty long time, and you'll be able to buy it. But if you want nicer mechanical stuff, go ahead and get a group set right now. You can probably find some shit on sale. You can do that. That's always an option.
So my opinion is similar to Andrea's. I have spent a lot of time with robots. They're pretty good. Like when Axis came out, it was inarguably like pretty damn impressive and pretty good, but it was damn near twice as expensive. That's a real thing. And also as time went on, as I saw more and more of them getting warrantied, it kind of started falling out of favor to me, including my own personal one that got warrantied. It's not like, I'm not trying to say there's some massive problem with SRAM, but it's electronic and it's going to be probably more likely to have issues. It just is, which is unfortunate. And it's expensive. So to me, the extra expense and the extra unreliability, I just don't know that it's worth it. I'm back on just, and this is not fully by choice. This is by laziness. The Kinevo SL that I got, it came with GX Mechanical on it, and I just never swapped it out. Because my other electronic stuff, I didn't swap it over because it already had a lot of miles on it, even though it had gotten warrantied. I just didn't really feel like messing with it. And I was definitely thinking about it down the road, but I'm like, you know what? This is already on the bike. I'm just going to ride it, see how it is. And to be honest, I just don't know that I care. GX is like perfectly acceptable. I would like it better if it were XO Mechanical, for example, or maybe like the new, what is it called? 90, Transmission 90?
Yeah.
Like that would be.
That's what I was just saying.
That would like, be fine too. Slaps. That would be totally fine too. But just like going out of your way, for example, in my case, to spend money, even at good employee pricing, going and spending money on robots when I have perfectly good mechanical on there, I just didn't do it. So, and again, I feel like I see more and more customers that have problems with this electronic stuff. Again, this is not, don't take this as some pandemic. There's not some huge issue that's happening, but I just feel like I see more of it than I'd like to see, which is a bummer. And when you get frantic calls from customers on the trail saying like, oh my God, I'm trying to do my ride and I drove for 4 hours and my shit won't connect or whatever. Man, that sucks. That's not a good time. And I've been there. I've been there on like a climb and my shit just stopped working. And no idea why. And I would like take the battery out. It would like work for a little bit and then it would die again. So that's like pretty frustrating. Not that you can't break a cable out there on the trail. That can happen and it does happen, right? But that stuff is pretty easy to catch. For the most part, if you replace your cable once a year and or if it looks frayed, replace the damn thing, it's probably never going to just randomly snap. But a piece of electronics, big question mark, right? Like it could kind of die whenever the fuck it feels like dying. Which really sucks. So I'm going more.
Can I give a rebuttal?
I'm going more and more anti-electronic. Go ahead.
I think if you look over the last few years, XTR 12-speed mechanical was pretty disappointing in terms of feel and durability.
It was fucking horrible. It's one of the worst products that's ever come out in the entire biking industry. It's fucking awful.
Oh, yeah. And that's what was on my e-bike was Shimano 12-speed.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And.
And it was definitely not as good as I put my Axis. I had some Axis stuff around and I put that on there and it's way better.
Oh, I'd rather have a Sarah 7-speed than XTR 12-speed.
And where I'm going is that means that there is a fuck ton of Axis out there. Just an absolute fuck ton.
I agree.
So
I agree.
I want to give the caveat that our sample size is huge because no one, I mean, Campy doesn't make mountain bike parts and Shimano, I mean, effectively wasn't making a compelling product for years. So, and for better or for worse, Axis was the coolest thing. So you weren't going to buy an Epic S-Works with 12-speed XX1 mechanical. It was going to be, you know, it was going to be robots.
I agree. And I agree. If you've bought a nice bike in the past 4 years, it's going to have robots on it. It's just going to. So I get it that it's out there a lot. And again, I'm putting asterisk on this as well. I'm not saying that every single one that comes in is bad. I'm just saying I'm seeing more of them dead than I would like to see.
All right. Well, we want to keep going. He's got like four more questions.
Jesus, yeah, let's go.
We're just going to do it. I've never ridden a moto in my life. What's one way in which riding a moto is more physically demanding than I might believe?
First off, if you drop it, you got to pick that fucker back up.
Well, he's 6'4", 200 pounds. He'll be fine.
I know.
Well, even so, you know, your average dirt bike weighs between 200 and 300 pounds. Regardless, like what's physical about it? It depends on what you're doing. I think if you're doing some more chill riding, it's not terrible. It's going to be a lot more upper body and a lot more, there's definitely more like kind of squatting stuff going on as you stand up and sit down from the pegs. There's definitely a lot of that. But definitely there's a lot of upper body involved, without a doubt. You could probably ask, in my opinion, the most physically demanding sport, if you want to call it. The sport's got a loose definition here. But the most physically demanding thing you can do is motocross. Like true and true motocross. Outdoor, indoor, like supercross and outdoor. That motocross stuff, indoor hard enduro, like actually full-on hard enduro, you know, Romaniacs type stuff and Erzberg. The absolute hard enduro guys, so the Billy Bolts and Graham Jarvises of the world, those two disciplines are probably some of the most physically demanding things you can do on the planet, period. And I think if you ask a lot of people who have done true motocross or hard enduro and have done other things in other sports, they would agree that that takes the most physical conditioning, and those are the most freaking hammer people out there. It's absolute bananas. I have a bananas.
Fun, well, a physiology fact for everyone.
Sure.
You want to know the sport that has produced the highest ever recorded lactic acid?
Oh, I know that one. That's easy. Yeah, blood. That's cross country skiing.
No, oh. Bull riding.
Oh, wow. Fascinating.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
So I'm going to just jump in and say, I think Kenny's right, but also understand that those are like premier athletes at the premier level, and we're fucking schmucks at the schmuck level. So, you know, taking your dirt bike to the motocross track is going to blow you out. For me, if I go ride the big bike, you know, the full-size enduro bike, and I do something that is, I mean, hard enduro adjacent, let's call it, you know, like I do something that's at my limit where I'm thinking and retrying and yada yada, like it's going to fucking blow me out. So I think it's just the more physical the ride becomes, the harder it is. And the part of the reason it's so hard is you're using your 200 pounds to tame, you know, 200 to 300 pounds and 30 to 50 horsepower. So, you know, there is a lot of times where you know that with throttle and clutch control and line choice and yada yada, the bike's going to go, but you got to fucking hold on to it. You know, it's not like you're sitting in a...
Yeah, I think there's maybe like a misconception. Yeah, for off any kind of off-road riding, even like even Jeep road style riding, if you're sitting down on a modern dirt bike, you're, other than to like take a break or like on an unbelievably smooth gravel road for a second, if you're sitting down, you're fucking doing it wrong, and or you're going to get hurt and bucked off the bike. You don't sit down on these things. You don't.
Unless I know I didn't ride a lot of moto, but I will say that mixed martial arts is harder than moto.
Unless you're stopped and you're trying to, like, from the seat, do some turn move. I mean, I'm just being a dickhead here. But it's just hard. It's physical, and you're holding on to a lot of horsepower and weight.
I'll also say that from my viewpoint, the stuff that I do, I'm going to call it trail riding / extremely light enduro, even on the e-moto where I'm doing more technical stuff. I had to work up to it, but I'm perfectly happy doing a 2, if not 3 hour ride on that. And to me, it feels about the same amount of exertion. I feel the same way when I'm done, maybe in slightly different muscles, but I feel about the same as a whole body experience as I do doing a normal trail ride for 2 or 3 hours on the mountain bike. Whereas on maybe the dual sport, if I'm doing more dual sporty things, I might ride for between 3 to 5 or even 6 hours because maybe there's a little bit of road sections connecting and this and that. And that's definitely one step down. That would be like doing the same thing on the mountain bike, maybe super light pedaling at, you know, 100 watts for a bunch of road connecting sections or something like that for a super long day on the mountain bike, right? So I think they're extremely similar, to be honest.
All right.
Next question.
The next one's pretty quick. Not related to bikes. What temperatures do you like your syrup? Out of the fridge, room temperature, or warm? Syrup is life, but warm is king.
I say the syrup should match whatever you're eating. So if you're eating something that is warm, your syrup should be warm. Likewise for cold and room temperature.
Are people putting syrup on like ice cream and shit?
I mean, maple syrup on ice cream is not bad.
I'm
right?
Sure you could. I haven't done it. I've only ever put, you know, that turtle hardening chocolate on there on ice cream because I'm fucking American, but
magic shell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just say you match it. Next question. Since this seems to be a potpourri of questions, what's your favorite bike shop smell? Fuck, I don't know. When a customer brings in a pizza or something and you get to eat it.
Flex cookies.
Yeah.
No. I'm going to give two. I'm going to give worst smell, which is that bike that has been over lubed forever with that mystery stuff that every 60-year-old dude that doesn't really ride, like,
it smells like rear end gear oil.
Yes. I don't know. I think there's a thing where, like, when you're 65 and you never raced in your life, every cyclist gets a 72-pack of white socks that don't stay up, and that mystery gear oil stuff they lube their chain with. My favorite smell, probably new tires.
It's all right.
So my...
No, I kind of like the smell of Demontech lube. It's pretty good.
All right. My favorite smell is epoxy.
Why?
Because I know. No, because I know someone's doing some shit they're probably not supposed to be doing. All my guys can attest to that. Whenever I smell it, because I can smell it instantly. Whenever I smell it, I get up from my desk and I walk over. I'm like, what you doing? And they're gluing some shit on. They probably shouldn't be gluing on.
All right. Matt can read the last question, which is also a multi-part question.
Last question. As a family, myself, wife, and two children, 10 and 7, we'll be doing a year-long road trip in a travel trailer starting in July. I would love to bring my mountain bike and do some riding, but I've pretty much talked myself out of it for a few reasons. One being space. Bike takes up a lot of space, and keeping it out of the elements means occupying cargo space in the bed of the truck that we'll probably need for clothes, food, etc. And then a safety question in terms of just like keeping it chill and not breaking himself off and destroying their trip. So I will say, let's start with space. I think the easiest way to solve that is bring it. And worst case, you ship it home to a friend that lives in your area because it's a pain in the ass and you don't have room for it. But I think a year without your bike while you're at all these cool places is going to be a giant pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And then in terms of safety, I would say ride it 50% everywhere you go and take an in reach and always have the tracking on. And yeah,
I have opinions.
You can, since Matt doesn't understand how an in reach works, if you have your in reach turned on, anyone who has the link to your map, they can go to your map, put in, if you have it password protected, they put in their password, and they can click on something that says locate in reach, and it will show them. And depending on your plan, it might cost a nickel or something, but it will show them where you are.
Never knew
that. All right.
Never knew that.
Yeah. I mean, if you actually looked at the map sometime, like, you might see that button that says locate in reach because it's pretty obvious. So, yeah, an in reach is good. Yeah, I think Matt's right. Like, take the bike with you however you can. And if it's really a pain in the ass, you're not using it, ship it back home.
I mean, his final part is like, is it best to leave the Haiti at home and do an occasional guided ride on a rental? My other part of that is going to be, you're going to be in a travel trailer with three other humans. So you probably just need your bike to run an errand.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. And if you're at campsites too, like, just sometimes you're like at one end of the campsite and the bathroom is a quarter mile away and you want to ride over there.
You want to go shit not in your little tiny home you're pulling behind your truck.
Yeah, exactly.
But the flip side of that is, you know, like, and your wife doesn't ride, so I'm just going to make some things up. You're going to be in a town and you're going to be like, oh, why don't you run into town and do a Pilates class and have some you time? Or like, why don't you go walk on that nice trail by yourself while I hang out with the kids? So it's going to be some of that give and take of like, y'all are all going to want time away from each other and having your bike. But if you have to go spend money to get away, it's going to be harder, but just having it with you. And again, if it sucks, just ship it home. Like, it's not that bad.
I mean, my opinion is, I mean, I wouldn't worry about getting hurt. Not doing something because you think you might get hurt is like kind of dumb, in my opinion. Be responsible, right? Like, if you're riding in an unknown area and there's like some gnarly fucking feature and you're by yourself, like, maybe just don't ride that feature. Like, no big deal. Walk the damn thing and carry an inReach. And they're extremely useful. And soon you're going to get Elon Musk internet on your phone. Like, it's a real thing. So there's going to be plenty of ways to be safe in that way. But I think it's pretty silly that you're worried about getting hurt if you're even reasonably experienced mountain biker. That's my opinion. I think you should do the stuff that you want to do. I mean, don't be dumb. But yeah, go have fun. And hey, if something happens, something could happen. Just in the same way that, you know, your wife could blow her ankle out, like, you know, going visiting town and walking around. So I think you should go have fun. But I don't think it's weird to not bring your bike. You could still totally plan, find the coolest place and go plan a couple days and go rent a bike and have your family do other stuff and you go do bike stuff for that, you know, couple days. No big deal.
All right. That was all of his questions, and we should read patrons and wrap it up.
Yeah, let's do it.
We have been recording forever. All right, so at $10 a month, we've got Zozo, Willie DeGoat, Tom's P, Tom Pickle, Timothy, Ty, Tennessee Zach, Taylor Zwift, Taperbore Pro, Sparkly Nips, Skunk in Your Trap, Samuel, Ryan, Ride Time Extended, Noah, My Pal Dal, MTV Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Leland, Kurt, Josh, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, JC, Jake D, Green Giant, Gordon, Frank the Tank, Fart Noises, Eric, Chunk Norris, Cam Irish One, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel of Dicks, Apple Bottom Make 'em Wanna Bite, Angry JRA Forever, AJ Aaron underscore at $11.11 per month, that one uncle whose hugs last just a little too long.
Jesus Christ.
Good Lord.
Padmill and Disco at 14 Australian, Dean at 16.50 Australian. At $20 a month, we've got Scott, Pooper Inch, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Brian, $26.06 per month, Legalize Meat Rice, Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, Trails Don't Build Themselves, at 50.
I'd like to say that meat rice is absolutely not illegal.
Yet.
Yet. All right. Well, that is an extra long show. We all done?
We are very
done. Done. Shut it down.
All bye. Right,
everyone, thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.